Welcome to the Israel Answers series, connecting Israel, the Bible, and you. Join Susan Michael as she explores timely issues and current events from a scriptural perspective to equip the Christian world with a balanced and biblical response. Be sure to subscribe for future episodes, which will ignite your faith and bring the Bible to life in your everyday world. Now, let's join Susan with your Israel Answers.
Well, we are here at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention with almost 5,000 people, and there are so many wonderful friends here and supporters of Israel. It's kind of like an annual homecoming, but we're here today with a very special friend that we've had on our show before, and we had a lot of listeners because it was such a popular broadcast. So with us today again is our dear friend, Rabbi Shmuel Bowman, the Executive Director of Operation Life Shield. And Shmuel, I want to welcome you warmly back onto our show. I know that you are a little jet-lagged probably just here from Israel, but you have had quite a difficult few months, as has all of Israel since the October 7th attack. But for you, it must have been especially difficult because you were in that area almost every day. You knew all of the security personnel. You knew all of the community leaders. You knew all of the teachers, the directors of the schools. You knew all of the people. And so many of them suffered from that attack. Share with us a little bit about, from your perspective, what it's been like and your personal connection.
So first of all, it's so good to see you. Mm-hmm. It's so good to be here. You know, in Israel, no one really asks, "Hi, how are you?" And so when someone says, "Hi, how are you?" My response is truly, it's just so good to see you. I feel, you know, good about that. Look, from our perspective, Operation Life Shield and ICEJ have been partnering for a decade and a half to protect lives in Israel. And the way we do that is a number of ways, but is by having the relationships that we have with the people on the ground there, the security officers, the security chiefs of the different regional municipalities of the cities. And so basically that relationship was uninterrupted. What that means is that on October the 7th, I was in communication with all the decision makers, just because on October the 5th, 2 days beforehand, we had spent time with them during the ICEJ Feast of Tabernacles, when we had, 1,000 pilgrims, Christians, who were there through the ICEJ in Shar HaNegev. We met with Ofer Lipshtein of blessed memory. I took a group of about 350 of the delegates. To think about it now is mind-boggling. We went to the border at Netiv Asara. I'm not saying close to the border. We were on the border with 350 delegates from the Feast of Tabernacles, with 7 security officers, you know, and literally 2 days later, that wall would be breached. Hamas terrorists would enter through along with an equal number of just ordinary Gaza citizens, we need to be clear on that, and come in on a murderous rampage that in that particular kibbutz left 20 people dead.
Can I just explain what you're telling our audience? I just want to say that during the Feast of Tabernacles, we took 1,000 Christians down to the Gaza border area for a solidarity rally.
Yes.
And you took 350 of them then to the border. I think they planted trees, didn't
they? So the other group, 700 and whatever, went to a different part of the Gaza border. They went to Kibbutz Be'eri, where there is an ICEJ forest. Very, very important forest, not only to bring beauty and growth to the area, but it's also a strategic forest to create a barrier, a visual barrier, so that Hamas could not fire Coronet RPG rockets, which require visual connection. And so it has a strategic approach, it has a beautification beautified the area. That's where about 700 of the delegates went. I took about 350 to the northern part of the border where we had a security briefing, and we went to a wall of peace where people, the delegates made out of ceramic messages of peace and hope that they then affixed to this wall on the border with Gaza.
And the Hamas terrorists breached the border at the very location, I think, where our forest is.
Yes.
And they trampled over the new trees,
yes,
is that right?
Yes,
so
absolutely, yes.
They
destroyed.
Actually came in right over the Christian Embassy Forest into Kibbutz Berry. And then you were a little bit farther north, which was probably another location. They breached
yes.
a number of locations.
That's where, at Berry, I need to be clear, the number of murdered was much, much higher. We're talking over 100 people were murdered there. Taken and kidnapped in the Nativa Sara because of a different strategy that had to do with the ICEJ communication devices that had been donated to Sof Ashkelon region. Listen, every life is a world, no question about it. But let's look at the numbers. 20 people were killed versus hundreds and hundreds and hundreds in other regions, and that had to do directly, don't believe me for it, talk to Amnon Ziv, who's the security chief of Chof Ashkelon, when he says that the ICEJ donated communication devices, that he was able to press one button, alert all the security officers, and as a result, what does he say, 3,000 lives were saved because of the push of one button of those ICEJ data. So that's why the numbers were much less.
So
old.
Let me explain that for our
Go
listeners.
For
so one of the techniques of the terrorists were they knocked out communication systems, and then probably the cell phones were overwhelmed with everything, and the ICEJ donated equipment, which operated more like a walkie-talkie, I think. It had its own
radio-based.
Worked. Therefore, the communities that we had donated them to were able to save lives
exactly.
and to prepare for the attack. They knew it was coming. They were able to arm and prepare for it. And so even today, we're still preparing. We're going to donate more equipment to more communities. When I heard this, I was blown away to think, my gosh, 2 years ago, we donated equipment. We had no idea how it would later be used to save thousands of lives. And, you know, so for our listeners, you can still donate today. We're still doing the very same thing. We're still putting in bomb shelters. We are still donating equipment. We are helping with these people that have been devastated.
The ATV firefighter vehicles. The list goes on. Medical supplies, defibrillators. Paramedic backpacks, all the things that are needed in order to provide security, to provide protection. The ICEJ Life Shield Partnership has been at the forefront. And I go back to my earlier comment, initial comments, where, you know, on October the 7th, and I was already in contact with everybody, and basically being able to say, what do you need now? What would you need in a month from now? And I'll be circling back to you to talk about what you're going to need in a year from now. But let's talk about what you need today and what are you going to need, say, in a month from now. And they were able to, most were able to figure out what that was going to be. As far as a year from now, that took a little bit longer till we could all calm down a little bit, but we're getting that information now. What was interesting, Susan, is that a number of, look, thank God, many, many organizations popped up. A lot of organizations that have not been involved with this sort of thing started to pivot in that direction. And everyone was calling me to say, who do I talk to? What are the emails? What are the phone numbers? And I thought to myself, we didn't need to look up a single phone number. We didn't need to look up a single email. These were people who we have ongoing relationships on a regular basis. So that was extremely, extremely important. So we were able to literally be on the ground and effective.
So we're speaking today with Rabbi Ishmael Bauman, who is our key contact. I mean, we're a partner. We couldn't do what we're doing if it wasn't for you. And you're able to connect us and the funding that our donors
right.
give to fund these projects and the needs there. But I want to ask you a very personal question, because I want our listeners to feel what you as an Israeli feel when you are talking about this and when you're dealing with this. But how many people that you knew personally died that day? I mean, how many funerals did you personally have to attend because you knew so many people?
12 of my very close friends were killed on October the 7th.
And what about taken hostage?
Two of my close friends were taken hostage, and they're still there.
They're still there.
One of them, just give a shout out to my dear friend, Jonathan Dekel-Fenn, who is the founder of the Bikurim Center for Arts and Music, which we've placed bomb shelters there over the years. His son, Sagi, was taken captive and is still there. And think about him. He's the same age. Jonathan and I are the same age. His son, Sagi, is the same age as my own children. Not a moment passes. Little things, Susan, on a personal note. I'll be very personal. You know, I'm in the habit of taking a shower every day. I mean, we all. It's out of necessity sometimes, and sometimes out of just the pleasure of it. There's some days when I wake up and I say, what right do I have to take a shower today? What right do I have when Sagi and the other captives haven't been able to wash themselves? You know, we know, for example, that the captives that were released after 50 days came back covered in lice, covered with
skin infections. And everything, because they couldn't clean themselves.
What's happening now?
Yeah.
And how about the women who are watched as they're taking showers,
right,
and are raped,
yeah,
while taking showers?
Right.
What right, by the way, and I've heard reports also men who are also being raped in showers. What right do I have to take a shower? These are the things that I carry with me as I think about them. I think about, you know, the fact of the matter is that this is the very first time, as in yesterday, that I'm not actually armed. Okay? From October the 7th, the thought of not having a weapon always with me, day and night, was unthinkable, because at any moment, you may need to protect yourself. It was very, very interesting that on October the 10th, I think it was, I happened to have to go back to renew my gun license. And it's a standard thing. You show up, you do some target practice, and you go through review the laws and the rules and everything, fine. And on October the 10th, they said, we're adding a new component to the renewal. And the component is, what do you do? You ready for this? What do you do as terrorists are approaching your home to either kill you or take you captives? What do you do? It was a new element of the training program that was in there. So this is kind of like the new reality. The new reality is that, look, in the words of Ilan Isaacson, who is one of our partners as a security chief in the Eshkol region, he said, before October the 7th, we forgot to treat our enemies as our enemies. Now we know. And we'll never be the same.
How profound. I wanted you to share that because it's so easy for us here in the United States. It's like we don't have that personal connection. And I know for the ICEJ, we as we said, we took this 1,000 pilgrims down there, had the solidarity rally, and the mayor of the region there, Ophir Lipstein, welcomed us, and we knew him well over the years, had worked with him, and he was one of the very first fatalities on October the 7th.
Yeah, he was one of the first listed known fatalities. Look, until before October the 7th, Israel was bringing in 20,000 Palestinian workers from Gaza a day. And the feeling was, and we heard this from Klof Ashkelon's security chief, Amnon Ziv, that through economics, we would be able to keep
peace.
A peaceful situation. Mm-hmm. That these workers would come over, earn a good wage, go back to Gaza, and their earning power would be quite strong, that they'd be able to support not just themselves and their immediate family, but perhaps their extended family as well. And through this, we thought that that would be the answer. Well, those 20,000 were coming over and they were spying out Israel. They were figuring out where the cameras were. They were figuring out where the weapons were held. They were figuring out where all the security personnel were. That's why 12 of my, well, not all of them were security officers. Some of them were, I think of my dear friend Liv Not. Liv Not was an art teacher. Liv Not, her husband, her children, and her in-laws were all shot to death and then burned, okay? All in a pile on their bed, which you consider to be the safest space in your house. The entire family was thrown on the bed, gunned down, and set on fire. The others were security officers. They knew where they were. They knew who owned dogs. So if you owned a dog, they came and shot your dog. So Ofer Lipstein, they knew who he was. So it's very, very easy. He's running out of his house. They shot him literally in front of his house.
And, you know, once again, here in America, I'm trying to relate this to our listeners, but here in America, it's so hard for us to understand that you may have a neighbor who wants to kill you. And but the Israeli people have woke up on October 7th to the reality that these people that for 10 years, 20 years, some of them, had been working in these communities, that they felt like they could trust, that they were friends, that they, you know, they're the very ones that betrayed them.
So this is why not only we talk about not only was there such a loss of life, but there was also a loss of faith and loss of trust and loss of ideology.
Yes.
Look, you and I have been talking about preparing, in a sense, for this sort of attack, or maybe not this sort of attack, but certainly attacks. People would say to me, but Shmuel, the north, northern Israel, it's so quiet up there. Come on, it's so, you know, nothing's happened there in 16 years. What are you putting bomb shelters in northern Israel for? And I said, well, and we know now it's happening in northern Israel. We've got, everybody's been evacuated up there. The place is under incessant attack. We know that Hezbollah is, as an agent, as a proxy of Iran, as a branch office of Iran, has no shortage of weapons. Recent figures that came from Elliot Shoduff are 350,000 rockets in the Hezbollah armory, ready to be launched. I mean, that's up from
350,000.
We were working with numbers like 150,000, 200,000. According to Elliot, from most recent security reports, 350,000.
And these are not just simple rockets. These are guided missiles.
They're guided. When they hit Sfat the other day, they knew exactly what they were going for. They weren't going for the artist quarter. They weren't going for the beautiful artwork and the music and the candle factory. That's not what they were going for in Sfat. They were going for the military base, okay, in Sfat. They knew exactly what they were going for. And for years, we were saying, well, let's see, you're sitting beside a neighbor, and go back to your example in the United States, you're sitting beside a neighbor who has a record of murder and says, I'm coming after you, I've got all the information, and he's sharpening his knives, and she's taking target practice, and she says, I got a bullet with your name on it. And she's been saying this for 15 years. We take that seriously.
We have to.
And I want to be really, really, really clear. Just so it's very, very, very clear. Our war is a war right now between good and evil. What Israel is doing right now, and I gotta tell you, because my son Gavriel, who was in the reserves, he's a gunner in a tank, and he was there from October the 7th until 3 weeks ago, and he was in Gaza, and he was released 3 weeks ago. He's going back tomorrow. They called him back up. He's going back tomorrow. And I want to say that the soldiers of the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, are doing holy work. They are literally protecting our nation and the world. And they're fighting evil. And you'll hear this all the time. I was listening to CNN last night and listening to Jake Tapper. And he didn't even take a breath between when he said this is Israel's war against Hamas, and then without taking a breath he said, and the devastation that's happening to the Palestinians. And I said, hold on a second. Wait. Let's be very clear. This is a war about good versus evil. And war is a terrible thing. And people get in the way. But let's be very clear who put those people in the way. Okay? It's not Israel. Hamas knows exactly what they're doing. They don't care about the Palestinian people. What is Israel supposed to do? When you've got the, take that person who's been sharpening their knives, those knives, and then multiply that in the thousands. We will no longer let women be brutally attacked, raped, and murdered. We will no longer allow for children to be beheaded and burned in ovens. We're not going to allow for men to have, it goes, you know, we're not, we're done with that. We're finished. We're done with that. Okay? And for many, many people, this was their Holocaust.
Yes.
And we're never, if we're going to be serious about the words never again, then it's meaningless, unless we understand what that means today. And that means today that the war against this evil is incomplete until we wipe it out.
Yes, and Shmuel, I know that, you know, the Israeli Defense Forces are at war with an evil force, this Hamas. But I think what shocked all of us is the rise of evil around the world, where Israel is being accused of genocide when they're actually up against a very blatant attempt of genocide. You're not perpetrating genocide. You're trying to stop it, and it's the genocide of your people.
You know,
and the world is so twisted anymore.
Do you know what this shows us? This shows us that if the Holocaust were to start again today in the year 2024, that it would happen. It would happen because the world would have it all wrong. The world would be blaming Jews. Now, thank God, the big difference is that we have Israel.
Yes.
God's fulfillment of God's word is that we have the state of Israel. Okay? That the dry bones have literally come out and have put on uniforms.
That's right.
Okay?
That's right.
So thank God for that.
Yeah.
But this is a time for deciding. October the 7th was the end of sitting on the fence, of being politically correct, of in the words of MSNBC, let's look at the other side. Let's look at the other side of the story. There is no other side of the story. It's like what? It's like, are you pro or against hacking heads off children? Is like, what are you talking about? On October the 7th, you and I and the rest of the world and everybody listening has to make a decision. Has to make a decision, yes or no. You're either with Israel or you're against Israel. There's no other side. There's no other way of understanding that.
And I understand. We all hate war. You hate war.
Absolutely.
The IDF hates war. I mean, nobody wants to go to war. And but our example is World War II, where my father was a World War II vet. He was on the front lines of infantry all across Europe, fighting an evil regime, the Nazi regime. And they had to devastate Europe in order to bring down the evil regime. And then they tried to help rebuild it. My father stayed for 2 years to rebuild parts of Germany. And that's exactly what's happening here. And we all hate war, we hate death, we hate destruction. But when you are up against an evil force like that, that has buried themselves in tunnels underground and is hiding behind civilians and hiding in hospitals and in mosques and in schools, there just has to be destruction.
When my, you know, bringing it back to the very personal, Gabriel, who was in Gaza, reports, he has every single house in Gaza was connected to terrorism. We're not talking about just members of the Hamas organization. Every single home had something, whether it was access to a tunnel, whether it was weapons, cache of weapons, whether it was other material, instruction books, maps, whatever it happened to be,
every single
that's what we're
home.
Talking about. You know, my son, my children, you know, and I hope this relates to your listeners who have children, who have grandchildren, that my children go from funeral to funeral. I mean, I lost 12 of my friends on October the 7th, but my children have lost their friends during this war. It's the last thing we want to be doing. My kids who are in their 20s have other things to do. They have school, they have their studies, they got friends, they've got music lessons. Believe you me, they've got other things to do. They're going from funeral to funeral. But let me be very, very clear. The nation of Israel is strong. There is a unity and there is a brotherhood and sisterhood that is going on in the nation of Israel right now that has we've never experienced such a thing. Maybe during the Yom Kippur War we did the last time. And we will be victorious. We will be, because when I look at my children, and when I look at my friends' children, there's no question. There is no alternative. There's no alternative. We need to win. We need to be successful. And it doesn't matter what else is going on in the world. The fact is that if the nation of Israel is divine prophecy, which I believe it is, we talk about Reshit Simchat Gulatenu, it is the beginnings of the redemption. That's what the state of Israel is, that sign for that. Then I truly believe that it doesn't matter what else happens. It matters where other countries, where other people, where other leaders stand with Israel. That's what's important. That's going to determine the success of the United States, of Canada, of Europe. That's what's going to determine their future.
Well, we certainly know that God is with you. He has brought your people back to their land. And it's not for destruction. It is for really a glorious future. And that helps us all and encourages us to continue to pray. Because just because God is with you doesn't mean there won't be hardship.
Oh, no, absolutely.
And there won't be a battle against you. And a battle against you means that there may be death. There may be loss of lives. There's a price to pay. But nevertheless, He is with you. And I think my prayer is that He's using this to strengthen your people, to strengthen the unity amongst the people of Israel. And I want you to know that we're praying for you. I'm encouraging our listeners to pray for you personally, to pray for your work there in the Gaza area.
And in the north.
And in the north, yes. We are partnering with you to do that in the north, and that God would be with you and that your people will experience peace after
Amen.
This trauma has passed.
Amen. I want to offer a prayer.
Okay.
To the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem in the United States and throughout the world, that we're approaching the holiday, the festival of Purim. And the entire lesson of Purim is about chapter 4:14, for such a time as this.
Yes.
Dear friends, this is the time.
This is.
There's a lot of resistance. And I bless each and every one of you that you stay strong, that you hold that vision of what needs to happen. The ICAJ is the lead organization in the world, in terms of the rally around Israel and the support for Israel in more countries than anywhere else. And each individual who's listening, who's watching, plays a role. May you be strong against the resistance. May you be strong in your vision. And just know that we love you in Israel. We love you so much for being our brothers and sisters in this fight. God bless you.
Amen. Thank you so much.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Out of Zion with Susan Michael. Be sure to subscribe to Out of Zion now on Apple Podcasts, cpnshows.com, YouTube, or wherever you like to listen and learn. Out of Zion with Susan Michael is a production of ICEJ USA, all rights reserved.